part of the Press Play Podcast Network.
It's Friday, May 10th, and welcome to Exit Polls, a new podcast that's part of the Press Play Podcast Network. And I'm your host, Steve Phillips, and we'll be coming to you every other week talking about politics and today's headlines and trying to make sense of an increasingly incomprehensible and topsy-turvy world. And we'll be here every other Friday looking at what's going on in politics, talking about what's happening in the context of this election and moving things forward in that regard. So looking forward to today's conversation. We're going to talk about what's happening in the headlines. We're going to do a headline section each week. We'll begin with that. Looking at briefly at some of the things that are happening, have some commentary and reflections on that. And then we're going to have a new segment that we're starting today, campus conversation. I'll explain that when we get to it, kind of get our read and the pulse of what's happening among young people and what's going on the campuses across the country. So that's what we're going to be getting in today. And let's get started. So, headlines. What's in the headlines? I want to talk about four things, and then that will lead into our next segment. So the first headline is don't believe the headlines. And so there's a lot of, particularly when it comes to polling, and particularly when it comes to New York Times polling about this year's election. And you find this a lot in terms of what's actually going on. There's been a series of polls that the New York Times has conducted and then published, in particular, other places have published these polls as well. But the Times in particular has been one of the most egregious entities putting these different things out there. And so it's created this distorted and inaccurate picture and impression around what's actually happening in the election. And it's this distorted impression in terms of how the election is going. Is Trump ahead? Is Biden ahead? How much trouble is Biden in? And it's created a lot of reverberations and then anxiety and angst and, you know, high blood pressure, particularly among Democrats and progressives, as you look at these different polls. So let me give you an example of one of these things that happened. So most significantly and prominently, so in November, the New York Times came out with a poll showing Trump way ahead. And Biden was doing poorly. Trump was ahead in like all of the battleground states and ahead by like 10 points in different states. And it really just suggested that things were in a cataclysmic, extremely dire state for Biden in particular, and then the Democrats in general. So that came out on a Sunday in November. Then 2 days later, there were actual elections with actual people going to the polls and voting. And so what you had happen there was when the actual election took place, Democrats like almost ran the table. And so they won back the state legislature in Virginia. They won the governor's race in Kentucky. They won the pro-choice ballot measure in Ohio. They won a couple of local races in Pennsylvania. Almost won the governor's race in Mississippi, which Democrats hadn't won in ages. So you had that happen. And so that was a repudiation of these polls. So if Democrats are doing so poorly and things are so cataclysmic for Biden and the Democrats, how are they winning the actual elections? And yet the Times continues to come out with these polls. In particular, the Kentucky race was a very strong indicator of how off these polls are and how incorrect they are. So let me say something about why they're off, and then we can come look at Kentucky in particular on how it illustrated and how it refuted what the polls were actually saying. So if you dig into it, and so this is one of the things that I've really tried to have people understand about politics, is because there's a, you know, there's this like mindset that you can't talk about race and you can't talk about racial identity and the behavior of different racial groups, and that's wrong and it's impolite and it's incorrect. There was like a whole Seinfeld episode back in the day where Elaine was dating somebody she thought was African American, and then she was all proud and trying to tell her, you know, Jerry, George, and Kramer, and then they kept saying, are we allowed to talk about this? Because there's just such a sense that you can't even talk about the reality of race within society. And yet the reality is that there's almost no more predictive data point around how elections are going to turn out than the voting behavior of different racial groups. African Americans, on average, have voted 88% for the Democrat every single presidential election since 1976. Republicans, every election since 76, the majority have voted for white voters, the majority have voted for Republicans. That's a very stark difference in terms of the patterns. And so you can't just look at the voters or the voters as a mass without breaking out by the racial group, how they're actually playing themselves out, who is actually in that electorate and what their behavior is. And so that's where you start to see the fallacy of the Times poll. I mean, ironically, for all of its doom and gloom for Biden, Biden was doing fine among white voters in that poll. He's about 37, 38%, which is what Obama had in his reelection. And so that is enough of the white vote for the Democrats to win with the large support from people of color, which they had historically had. Yet the Times had Biden's black support like in the 70-something percent rate, which was far below what the both historical average has been, is far below what Biden got. Either something's wrong with the poll or something dramatic and fundamental has happened with black folks. And no one has dug into that or explained it. And there's no actual evidence that it is the case. And the Kentucky race was the perfect illustration of that. You had a white Democrat, Andy Beshear, running against black Republican Trump support and a Trump, you know, acolyte. So if there were ever a case where you're going to have a test case, or is there all of this black folks defecting from the Democrats, it would have been Kentucky. And yet Beshear, the white Democrat, beat the black candidate and beat him handily in the blackest counties in the state. So I say all that to say, don't believe the hype. Don't believe the polls, and particularly don't believe the New York Times polls. And I had written a piece in the Nation a few weeks ago pointing out that Biden is in fact the front runner. You're just looking at objectively what the data shows at the economy, at the changing composition of the country, at the declining number of swing voters, that if you really look at this objectively, Biden actually is the front runner. That should be your primary lens, which you look at the election at. And then when you see these, you know, dire and dramatic polls, don't believe the hype. So that's what I want to say about that headline about the polling piece that's out there. Then two less serious or, you know, intense pieces, or maybe depending on how much of where you fall on these different types of things. And then I do want to get into something pretty serious that'll lead into our campus conversation segment. So, and this will be very brief because my knowledge is very shallow around this, but if you do have any knowledge around just the, maybe this, what I want to say here is what has been in the headlines is this whole hip hop fight between Drake and Kendrick Lamar, that if you are in the hip hop world, you know far more than I do about it. And if you're not, then maybe I'll just share a little bit of what I've gleaned as a, frankly, non-hip hop person, or certainly somebody who hasn't been knowledgeable about hip hop since, you know, since MC Hammer's days in the 1980s or whatnot. But it's been all over the place. People keep talking about it. And so basically, and what also is interesting, and even I was at an event last night in Texas where you had these two different local block elected officials referencing this as that, you know, they're friends, but they were joking about they have this feud like Drake and Kendrick Lamar, and who was Drake and who was Kendrick Lamar. Broad strokes, my understanding, and then obviously if you have input or feedback that we're not, that I'm off on these different things, then feel free definitely to let me know in terms of, you can, you know, tweet me at ZPTweets or go to stephephillips.com and do give input and questions that we're going to be doing on regularly there. But basically for the uninitiated or those who are not involved, so there's, Drake and Kendrick Lamar. So Drake is seen as the more mainstream you know, highly successful, you know, rapper hip hop artist. And then Kendrick Lamar is the more authentic, street, down with the people type of person. And so they really went at it this weekend. And Kendrick Lamar was dropping these songs, really going after Drake, criticizing him, calling him out for being, you know, inauthentic, soft, not really Black, etc. And then Drake responded in the song of his own, and Kendrick Lamar like came like right back, apparently, in a matter of like hours at the most, in terms of, so you never kind of see that in terms of these hip hop battles. So that's about as far as I know about it, but it's an interesting, it's like blown up on these time on my timelines and people talking about it. And so just sort of try to understand what these broad references are. And then also, I think, frankly, in terms of the, you know, trying to keep current with some of the culture and what's happening out there in society. And then last is this, well, this third point is the issue around the Brady roast. This is the third headline I want to talk about. People may have seen it. It was on Netflix. It was a big deal, very highly watched. It was live roast with all these different comedians. And then I was talking to somebody, actually interesting, somebody from Houston was pointing out the parallels between this roast and Deshaun Watson, who's from Houston, had all of these sexual assault lawsuits and charges against him, and then goes to Cleveland. The Browns reward him for that, for the 100, you know, the make him the highest paid quarterback ever. And it was just, it was interesting that this person pointed out, so like nothing was off the table in this roast. And it's kind of been all over the place, people talking about it in terms of the topics that they were actually covering. And extremely raunchy, getting into different things you didn't think people would get into, etc. And but what was interesting is that, so that was the overall tenor. There was one joke about Robert Kraft, the owner of the New England Patriots, who had been arrested or arrested at a massage parlor for soliciting sex at a massage parlor. And then they made that all go away, etc. So there was a joke about that. And that's the one time Brady got up and went to the MC and says, don't talk about that stuff anymore. And so that was, he's trying to squelch that. And, but then there were all of these jokes about his wife, Giselle, the model and the mother of his kids and whatnot, and an affair she allegedly had with the jujitsu instructor. All of these jokes about her, he just sat there and smiled and didn't do anything about that. So I just thought that was interesting in terms of really a parallel, you know, for those of us who are Cleveland sports fans, a similar reality that there's just not the level of concern about sexual assault, mistreatment, massage, you know, therapist in particular. So that was an undercurrent and an under-discussed aspect of that Brady roast. So wanted to raise that. And then the last headline is, we're going to transition into the campus conversations piece, where we're going to talk about what's happening on the college campuses. And so, you know, this you know, war is going on in the Middle East, and Israel and Hamas, and it's going on in Gaza. There's all this attack. 40,000 people have been killed. Very intense debate and discussion within this country. It is, frankly, straining the progressive coalition in different ways. We can talk about that, you know, probably in a future episode. And we've had over the past few weeks is protests all at a lot of campuses across the country about this, and a big backlash and a big crackdown on the campus protests. And you have police being called in. Somebody commented that far more aggressive crackdown on nonviolent student protesters than there had been on the insurrectionists on January 6th. But that's been something very much in the news, and that's been happening regularly out over the course of the past few weeks. Columbia in particular, UCLA, but lots of campuses have seen this, both the activism and of the students and the aggressive crackdown of the administration calling the police. And it's been a big topic in the media as well around, they're going to get tough with these kids and blah, blah, blah. So that's clearly a thing that's happening. And that is something that we're going to get into in our next segment. which is we're going to introduce the campus conversations section of this, where we're going to look at what's happening on the campuses as we head towards 2024 election. But before we do that, let's take this break.
Hey, this is JD from the Hyman Podcast, a place to have hard conversations revolving around the overall human experience. We tackle topics such as racism, the American justice system, and even headlining news such as the Alex Murdoch saga. This season, we're going to continue to tackle more hard-hitting topics, and I'm excited to take you on that journey. The Hyman Podcast is available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. The Hyman Podcast is produced in conjunction with the Hyman brand and is part of the Press Play Podcast Network.
What's up, everyone? Chase Smith here, host of the Chase Smith Podcast, and my podcast reflects who I am, my hobbies, my interests, my passions, my curiosities, my careers, my questions, and my family. I'll spend time talking about all types of sports, movies, TV shows, trending news stories, and other cultural events, and even faith. This is who I am, and I hope I can get to know you as well. Join me on the Chase Smith Podcast, and let's have some thought-provoking conversations, only on the Press Play Podcast Network.
All right, so we are back, and I want to introduce now a new segment of the podcast we're going to call Campus Conversations. And I was just listening today, actually, to Bill Simmons, who has like the top listened to sports podcast, and he regularly incorporates his family members into his pods. He's got cousin Sal, and he has his dad on, talk about Boston sports sometimes, and he has his daughter just finished her first year in college. Was on the pod that was out today, that was out this week, talking about what she had learned, et cetera, et cetera. So, and then for those who listen to the Press Play Podcast Network, Adam the Bull has had a segment with his son, and he calls Aaron the Calf, I think, talking about popular entertainment and whatnot. So I want to do a segment, particularly since how important in this election year young people are, what they're attitudes, their enthusiasm, their questions, their concerns are. I think it's important to understand politics to understand what's going on with young people and what's happening on our college campuses. So for that, I am going to be having actually different of my nieces join, who are all at different campuses, different parts of the country, actually. So they'll give us some perspective. So to inaugurate this segment, delighted to be joined by my niece, Deira, who is in college in Texas and is going to share with us what's happening there. So welcome, Deira.
Thank you. I'm excited to be here and on this podcast with you, Uncle Steve.
Yes, I'm really delighted to have you. You just finished finals, is that right?
Yes, yesterday was my last final.
What was the final in and how was it?
It was my visual programming one class, so it's coding. It wasn't bad. We were all super stressed out because we only had one other exam in there, and that exam was torture. But this was a lot easier than the first one, so yeah, I'm pretty confident on it.
Awesome. And as an uncle, I should know this, but you're finishing your junior year, is that right?
Senior year. But I just called it my fourth year since I'll be graduating next year.
Okay. And your major is what exactly?
Computer information systems.
Awesome. All right. So let's talk about what's going on the campuses. So I had talked a little bit before you came on about these protests that are happening a lot of the campuses about what's going on in the Middle East and then Gaza and that situation. And that what I didn't mention is that, and we put this in the newsletter for the organization I run, Democracy in Color, but I came of age in a lot of ways in the context of student protests. This was around the Free South Africa movement back in the 1980s. Nelson Mandela was in prison. They were fighting against apartheid. And there's a lot of protests on students on campuses, including and particularly Columbia University, which has protested more recently on the Middle East issues here. And that inspired us to get involved. And there was a real sense of around things are happening in the world and how are we going to respond to them? And that was part of the my process in terms of getting involved and getting activated. So I wanted to get a sense of what, you know, so we see in the media is all the dramatic pieces of these protests, and they bring in the police, and then it's, you know, a lot of this conflict and whatnot. But on your campus, dear, what have you seen? I know you said you guys are heading into finals. That may have impacted some of the activism too. But what have you seen and what have you been hearing about students protesting in this regard?
So I believe it was on Monday. We actually had a protest on campus. I didn't know about it. I just happened, like, I found out through walking. I was heading to go back home. I was doing some office work for an organization I'm part of, and someone had walked in. I was like, did y'all see what's happening on campus? And I'm like, no, like, it's finals week. What do you mean what's happening on campus? Right. Mm-hmm. And she's like, there's a protest. And I was like, about what? And she was like, everything that's happening in Gaza. And I was like, I didn't know that. I was like, how'd you find out? She was like, well, I walked through it. And I was like, okay. And, like, that was kind of early on in the day. I left, like, halfway through the day. I wasn't expecting to see it still going on. So I walked through, and I decided to, like, came back a little bit just to see, like, everything. I had, after that, it was crazy because it all started popping up with all the other universities doing their protest. I didn't stay too long. I believe finals had a big impact on the turnout on it. There was more people than I would expect due to finals. But with a lot of other events we've had on campus and, the, like, not during finals, there's a bigger turnout.
Well, Gabby, when you went by, what did you see?
We have a – so I go to Texas State, and we have two horses, which is where all of our political debates happen, like any type of, like, dispute that usually happens there. So that's where they were, and it was kind of gated off. And then there's, like, different QR codes. So I actually learned that one, our Honors College building has a Palestine flag, and they're trying to get students to, like, sign this petition because they want them to take the flag down unless they're willing to put an Israel flag up there too. They were doing some chanting. I did see a big thing was our police was definitely, like, there's a lot of police on campus in that area. And I had learned about the arrest that happened at UT during their protest that day. But
oh, what happened
at UT?
Yeah,
I didn't get the details of what happened there. I just know there was multiple students and non-students who were arrested during the protest. And that first it was like anyone arrested wasn't allowed on campus anymore. And then they turned it to if they're a UT student, they can come on campus to take their finals. Someone tried to tell me that it was something Governor Abbott signed into play. She didn't really know much about it. And I, because of finals, I didn't, like, go looking into it. But basically, like, anyone that was going against Jews, she said, against Israel, she said, like, could get arrested. And I was just like, okay. Like, I didn't hear about it, but I guess she heard about it. So there was, like, over a dozen people I heard that got arrested during the UT protest. So I feel like that was a big play into why our police presence was big on Monday. I would say, like, compared to the protest I've seen on, like, Instagram and TikTok, ours was very much, like, smaller and peaceful. Like, there wasn't, they would chant from time to time, but it was really just, like, kind of there with signs or, like, speaking on, like, telling stories of what's happening and that type of stuff.
And have you seen other protests on campus in the time you've been there?
No, I haven't. Monday was the only day.
I mean, like, period, the time you've been in school.
Period. I don't believe so. Like, off the top of my head, I want to say no. I know we've had, like, rallies about other political subjects. And I don't know. I don't remember what it was about. I believe it was 2 years ago. I walked through that one on my way to class, and so, like, I couldn't actually, like, see what it was about. I just know there was a lot of people out there.
You said they had QR codes at the
Facebook? Yeah, like, they were trying to have people scan the QR code and, like, it'd take them to a link to, like, sign a petition.
Yeah, we used to print out paper flyers and hand them out by hand.
they were handing out. Yeah, so they were like the QR codes were I guess taped to like the gated off air, like the gate that they were using. Mm-hmm. And then they were handing out like booklets, but I didn't take a booklet because I would look at it and then throw it away. So I was just like, mm-hmm. I don't want one. We also had a lot of like faculty and stuff out there at our protest. I don't know mm-hmm. if our like the students that decided to do it kind of went through the school to get permission or if the faculty was out there, but they looked like they were just hanging out until it was over.
All right. It just wanted to you to see these headlines and again, you find out the tap, you know, hear directly from folks who are in it.
Mm-hmm.
It's, you know, it's always an interesting perspective and whatnot. So, but that's kind of, that's what I wanted to, you to share with our listeners. So I appreciate you coming on and, I will, I literally am I going to see you actually today, actually. But I'm actually in Texas for our listeners. So, but we'll wrap this segment here, Deira, and thanks for coming on the podcast
for
Campus Conversations.
Of course. Thank you for having me.
All right, great. All right, it's great to catch up with Deira. That's kind of what I want to do in these segments is to really get the on the ground view, take the pulse of what's happening on the campuses as we head towards this election. So I appreciate her joining us for that. And then the next episode, actually another of my nieces in another state is going to be joining us to give her take as well. So I want to thank everyone for listening to another episode of Exit Polls Podcast. I'd like to thank my team at Democracy in Color and the Press Play Pods Network for allowing me to create this new show. I'd also like to thank producer Michael for producing this episode. And then tune in to Exit Polls in 2 weeks. We'll be back here again to discuss the latest news and the headlines about politics in 2024. Thanks for joining and have a great couple of weeks.